turn to you and I say, Mark, what's in your suitcase? What are you going to tell me?
In my case, besides the obvious documentation to prove who I and my children are, I would have my laptop. I would have...
Well, no. We're 1942 here. We're before
1942?
The night of, we're before the night of broken glass. We're going back to a simpler time.
Ah, so before Kristallnacht.
Right.
What would be in my suitcase? Like I said, it would be identity papers, any type of documentation for any stocks or bonds that I might possess, some clothing, as much cash as I could get. Honestly, I that would be something I would have to think about seriously, because knowing the resources at that time, I'd be hard-pressed currently to give a definitive answer.
Well, good, because that's what I'm going to make you think about tonight. And that's going to bring me back to Katrina in a minute. But in talking to some of those Jews, and of course, the Jews I've spoken to were kids. You know, they were maybe as old as 15 or 16 at the time. And when I say, well, what's in your suitcase? They all say, oh, I had some clothes, and I had this and that and some little things. And then they say, and I had, you know, a picture of my mother. And then they'll always name some other small object of personal significance. If you ever talk to somebody whose house is burned down, which happens, believe it or not, 400,000 times a year in this country, if you ever get to talk to somebody whose house is actually burned completely to the ground, they've lost everything, they always tell you the exact same thing in the exact same way. They say, oh, yeah, it burned completely down. We lost everything. And then the next words out of their mouth is, all our pictures. They always say that. They never say, oh, you know, we lost all of our plates and our dishes, or we lost all of our food, or we lost all the jewelry. They always say, we lost all the pictures. And to bring that into Katrina, everybody's familiar with the 17th Street Canal breach, where, you know, that's where the large canal coming on the Lake Pontchartrain ruptured into Lakeview, which is a fairly affluent area. And where that rupture happened was a particular house, and that particular house was owned by the grandmother of a friend of mine. And she wasn't going to leave. She was ready to stay, you know, through the storm. And some of her friends finally talked her into, they said, oh, come on, we're leaving. Let's just get out of town for the weekend. You know, come with us. We're going. So she said, okay. She threw two sets of clothes and a pair of shoes in a bag and left. And 24 hours later, her house was washed away. And so when I finally got to speak to her and you know, to ask her about, you know, what had happened to her and what her condition was, the first thing out of her mouth was, I lost everything, all my pictures. And that was a common theme. You know, everybody wanted to talk about, I lost all my pictures. And there's a particular story, and the way I tell this is I tell it as Adam and Eve, because I don't want to use their right names. Adam lived in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. He worked for the railroad for many years. He was retired, made a good living, had a good pension. His wife had died about 10 years before the storm, and they had moved into the house in Bay St. Louis so they could be near the coast, because that's what she had always wanted all her life. And after she passed away, he did fairly well for himself. He had, you know, not much family, but he had a few friends. And he had enough money. You know, he was doing pretty well for himself. Very likable guy. And then, of course, Katrina came along. And he was in the house. And as the water came up his street, he drove out. Because he finally realized, I can't stay here anymore. I'm not going to make it. And, of course, when he went back, there was absolutely nothing left of his house. It was completely gone. There was nothing but a slab on the ground. And he didn't have anything but the clothes on his back and his car. Nobody thought much of that because, you know, well, you know, he's insured, you know, and he's got money in the bank, you know, no big deal. And one of the things that he said that always really stuck with me was, I lost all my pictures, and he'd get very emotional about it. And one of the things I said was, well, don't worry about it, Adam. I said, you know, we'll make new pictures. And he said, no, you don't understand. I'll never see Eve again. Well, she'd been dead 8 years. You know, and so I never made that kind of an emotional connection with a photograph, but I could imagine, you know, that some people would, and that was sort of something, I guess, that kept Adam going. And he sort of tooled around with, you know, he was going to rebuild the house, and he was going to do this again, and, you know, he was going to put the house back like it was. And then, finally, when we all thought, you know, he's getting it together, everything's going to be okay, Adam went down to Lowe's Hardware, bought a 100-foot length of yellow nylon rope, and hung himself on the last tree that stood on his property. And we all stood around going, wow, why? And that was when I started to put together that of all the different kinds of wealth there are, there's a kind of wealth that we never talk about and we almost never prep for. In order to identify that, you and I can play a game, Mark. You got a nice big front yard?
Kind of. Most of it's a big backyard.
Okay, well, we'll put it in the backyard. Okay, we're going to take everything out of your house. We're going to take all of your important documentation, your birth certificate, your Social Security cards, everything, all of your identification for you and all the kids. Then we're going to take all your photographs. We're going to take all of your kids' artwork, all of the stuff you've got hanging on the refrigerator, and anything that has any personal meaning to you at all. And we're going to put it in a big pile. Then we're going to make another pile separate from that one. And that's going to be all of your food preps, all of your fuel storage, all of your stuff in the house that doesn't really mean anything to you, but it's wealth. And now once we've got two big piles in your yard, I'm going to say, all right, Mark, I'm going to pour gasoline on one of these piles and I'm going to light it on fire. Which one do you want me to burn? Which pile are you going to tell me?
I tell you the press.
Okay. Well, you've just identified an objective. And what you're telling me is that emotional wealth is more valuable than any other kind of wealth. And the reason that Adam hung himself was because he was suffering from an emotional poverty. And we prep against physical starvation. But why don't we prep against emotional starvation? And nobody ever seems to talk about that in any of the books or the magazines. So our major objective is health and life. And our second objective is emotional wealth. And emotional wealth means home. All right, so define home for me. What does home mean to Mark?
Home to me is my family, my kids, the pictures, as you said. That's my history. That's my background. That's my life.
That's it. Okay. I since I'm a writer and I have that skill, the way I put it is, home is the bank in which we deposit our emotional wealth. And if we choose our investments wisely, we can grow interest on that account. And, you know, you can use the ridiculous example. It's like, all right, well, Mark, you know, you've got seven kids. You know, you've got plenty. You could probably spare one. How much would you sell me one for? You would fight and die before you'd ever sell me one of your kids. Okay? So the wealth part of the prep is important. But we also need to talk about our emotional prep. Some people came back, you know, and they saw that their house was gone, and they just lost it. The suicide rate went through the roof around here after Katrina. And that's kind of something that nobody really talks about too much. But that kind of prep is something that I cover in the blog where, you know, I'm telling you, you know, get all your pictures on the laptop, scan everything you can. The whole contents of your wallet, all of your pictures, all your kids' artwork. You know, because I mean, I've got, you know, 10 boxes now of stuff that Virginia, you know, papers that Virginia scribbled on. After a while, I don't know what I'm going to do with it anymore. I'm going to have to go through and get rid of some of it. But
I'm about the same way.
As I define it in the blog, the objective is always to go home. The strategy is always to move forward, and the tactics really aren't that important. Is it nice to have food prep? Yeah, you know, that's a great tactic. Is it nice to have money in the bank? Is it nice to have, you know, gas in the tanks? Yeah, it's nice. But if we can get away with health and our emotional wealth, we can cover the physical stuff later.
So basically what you're saying is, you know, like you were saying, everybody needs to get their important, you know, not just their documents, but also their photos and pictures and everything. Get them on a medium that's easier to carry.
Sure. You know, and
so
I've got
that afterwards during the rebuilding, it will sort of complete you. So, you know, here you is, you know, you're done. You've built a new house. Now it's time to fill it.
Right. It's not.
And by putting up your pictures and stuff, that gives you the emotional closure of, hey, this is my house.
That's right. So now if we go stand on the train platform in Nazi Germany in the 40s, and I look at you and I say, Mark, what's in your suitcase?
I'd have actually several suitcases full of papers and pictures and stuff like that.
You know, well, they only let you have one, as it is. You know, and I'm not going to make you give me a list. But I'm trying to raise the question in your mind and in the listeners that this is really the most serious thing you can prep for. And, of course, the greatest risk of that loss is a fire in your house. You know, because like I said, 400,000 homes burn every year.
That's,
you know, not of them, all of them
I
burn.
I have so many fire extinguishers in my house.
But, you know, are you able to get, you know, do you have something put together? Like I talk about on the blog, my laptop bag is my big one. You know, do you have something put together so if the house catches fire in the middle of the night, you can grab it and either take it with you or just throw it out the window? That's been my plan for a long time. I'm just going to chunk that sucker right through the glass window. I've got a little bit of USB flash drive that's 2 gigabytes worth of storage. And on that, I've got scans of all of my papers, which is, you know, over 1,000 papers now. And about 6,600 pictures. All right, and that goes in my wallet. So everywhere I go, I know I have that. You know, so if I drive up to the driveway one day and the house is burnt to cinders, it's like, okay, well, yeah, the house is gone, and there's going to be some things I'm going to miss, but I've rescued a tremendous amount of that emotional wealth. And that sort of brings me to the second part of where I wanted to go with this. And I'm not trying to pick on you, but I'm going to go back to that show where you said that, you know, something bad is going to happen. I don't know what, don't know when, but something bad is going to happen. And I had that before Katrina, too. And what Katrina taught me was, I don't say that anymore. I don't say something bad is going to happen. I say some opportunity is going to arise. Okay, so if the house burns down, we don't sit around and go, my, what a terrible tragedy. We go, wow, we get to plan and build a whole new house. And the people after Katrina who had that mindset, who were, you know, oh, yeah, you know, this is, we're going to do this, and we're going to either that or we're going to get out of here, did a lot better than the people who were like, oh, I want it to be exactly like it was. Because they were always clinging to that, what I had, instead of moving forward a little bit and saying, what can I have?
Yeah. Oh, I've wished many a time that I could afford the library Dr. Higgins from the movie My Fair Lady. I've wished many times I could afford a house that had that library.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice. You know, I mean,
yeah, I love my books.
Yeah, when I lived in Ponchatoula, I had a library of about 6,000 books. It wasn't quite as fancy as Dr. Higgins. Of course, then I got married and got kids, so.
Oh, that happened to you too, huh?
Yeah, it happened. Of course, it happened to you a lot worse than it happened to me. You do know what causes that, right? But, you know, so if you have that, the objective to keep moving forward. And this is something that it really took me time to put together when I look at people who post Katrina are very successful people. They're all people who said, this is an opportunity for me to move forward in some way. And, you know, sometimes that was actually physical. You know, I personally made a lot more money post-Katrina than I did before Katrina, not because, you know, I said, hey, I can charge a higher rate, because we didn't. We actually froze our rates for 1 year. But because other people, other businesses who do what we do were not prepared for what happened, and so they all went under. So we sort of became the only game in town. When we had our stuff together, and you know, we did it right. We took that as an opportunity, not as a disaster. The people who don't take it that well, who don't take that attitude, wind up one of three ways. They either wind up a suicide, they wind up an alcoholic, or they wind up as a psych patient somehow. And my wife works in mental health services, so I can... You know, I can't rattle the numbers off on the top of my head, but the need for mental health services after the storm went through the roof, too.
I can imagine.
You know, and that's not just something you think about for yourself. You know, I sort of, when we drove out of here, I sort of steeled myself for, you know, well, I might come back and the house could be gone, you know. And you, when you live in an area like we live in, you sort of have that in the back of your head. You know, this could be gone next week. You know, but then when you're driving out in the car and you know, your little kid turns to you and says, you know, well, is our house going to be okay? You really need to have a good answer for that. You know, I sort of drooled on myself for a while trying to figure out a good answer for Virginia. And I decided to tell the truth. I said, you know, I just don't know. I'm not sure. Might be, but for now, we're going on vacation. And if I'd have been smart enough, if I knew then what I know now, I would have just told her, oh, we're going home. Because we were. we were going to keep moving forward until we got home. So I want to go back again to World War II Germany. I want to talk about another thing, which is also about bugging out.